I made a feeble excuse that the wounded men in the makeshift hospital might need me, but Taunus brushed it away cheerfully. None of your fine scruples now, Taita. You will stay with me during the questioning to make certain that you overlook none of your old friends on your first inspection. Questioning was swift and merciless, which I suppose was only appropriate to the character of the men we were dealing with. To begin with, Taunus sprang up onto the stone altar of Bess, and with the hawk seal in one hand, he looked down on the ranks of squatting prisoners with a smile that must have chilled them, even though they sat in the full rays of the desert sun. "I am the bearer of the hawk seal of Pharaoh Mimosa, and I speak with his voice," he told them grimly, as he held the statuette high. "I am your judge and your executioner." He paused and let his gaze pass slowly over their upturned faces. As each of them met his eyes, they dropped their own. Not one of them could hold firm before his penetrating scrutiny. "You have been taken in the act of pillage and murder. If there is one of you who would deny it, let him stand before me and declare his innocence." He waited while the impatient shadows of the vultures circling in the sky above us crisscrossed the dusty courtyard. "Come now, speak up, you innocents." He glanced upwards at the circling birds with their grotesque pink-bald heads. "Your brethren grow impatient for the feast. Let us not keep them waiting." Still none of them spoke or moved, and Taunus lowered the hawk seal. "Your actions, which all here have witnessed, condemn you. Your silence confirms the verdict. You are guilty. In the name of the divine Pharaoh, I passed sentence upon you. I sentence you to death by beheading. Your severed heads will be displayed along the caravan routes. All law-abiding men who pass this way will see your skulls grinning at them from the roadside, and they will know that the shrike has met the eagle. They will know that the age of lawlessness has passed from the land, and that peace has returned to this very Egypt of ours. I have spoken. Pharaoh Mimosa has spoken." Taunus nodded, and the first prisoner was dragged forward and forced to his knees before the altar. "If you answer three questions truthfully, your life will be spared. You will be enlisted as a trooper in my regiment of the guards, with all the pay and privileges. If you refuse to answer the questions, your sentence will be carried out immediately," Taunus told him. He looked down on the kneeling prisoner sternly. "This is the first question. What clan do you belong to?" The condemned man made no reply. The blood oath of the shrikes was too strong for him to break. "This is the second question. Who is the baron that commands you?" Taunus asked, and still the man was silent. "This is the third and last question. Will you lead me to the secret places where your clan hides?" The man looked up at him, hawked in his throat, and spat. His phlegm spattered yellow upon the stones. Taunus nodded to the guardsman who stood over him with the sword. The stroke was clean, and the head toppled onto the steps at the foot of the altar. "One more head for the pyramid," Taunus said quietly, and nodded for the next prisoner to be brought forward. He asked the same three questions, and when the shrike answered him with a defiant obscenity, Taunus nodded. This time the headsman mistimed the blow, and the corpse flopped about with the neck only half severed. It took three more strokes before the head bounced down the steps. Taunus lopped 23 heads. I was counting them to distract myself from the waves of debilitating compassion that assailed me, until the first of the condemned men broke down. He was young, not much more than a boy. In a shrill voice he gabbled out the replies before Taunus could actually pose the three questions to him. "My name is Hui. I am a blood brother of the clan of Busti the Cruel. I know his secret places, and I will lead you to them." Taunus smiled with grim satisfaction and gestured for the lad to be led away. "Care for him well," he warned his jailers. "He is now a trooper of the Blues and your companion in arms." After the defection of one of them, it went more readily, although there were still many who defied Taunus. Some of them cursed him, while others laughed their defiance at him until the blade swept down and their bravado ended with their very last breath that burst from the severed windpipe in a crimson gust. I was filled with admiration for those who, after a base and despicable life, at the end chose to die with some semblance of honour. They laughed at death. I knew that I was not capable of that quality of courage. Offered that choice, I am certain that I would have responded, as some of the weaker prisoners did. "I am a member of the clan of Ur," one confessed. "I am of the clan of Ma-En-Teth, who is baron of the West Bank as far as El-Kaga," said another. until we had informers to lead us to the strongholds of every one of the remaining robber barons, and a shoulder-high pile of recalcitrant heads to add to the pyramid beside the well. One of the matters to which Tanus and I had given much thought was the disposal of the three robber barons we had already captured, and the score of informers we had gleaned from the ranks of the condemned shrikes. We knew that the influence of the shrikes was so pervasive that we dared not keep our captives in Egypt. There was not a prison secure enough to prevent Akseth and his barons from reaching them, either to set them free by bribery or force, or to have them silenced by poison or some other unpleasant means. We knew that Akseth was like an octopus whose head was hidden, but whose tentacles reached into every facet of our government and into the very fabric of our existence. This was where my friend Tiamat, the merchant of Safaga, came into my reckoning. Marching now as a unit of the Blue Crocodile Guards and not as a slave caravan, we returned to the port on the Red Sea in half the time that had taken us to reach Galala. Our captives were hustled aboard one of Tiamat's trading vessels that was waiting for us in the harbour, and the captain set sail immediately for the Arabian coast, where Tiamat maintained a secure slave compound on the small offshore island of Yezbakhan, run by his own warders. The waters around the island were patrolled by packs of ferocious blue sharks. Tiamat assured us that no one who had attempted escape from the island had ever avoided both the vigilance of the warders and the appetites of the sharks. Only one of our captives was not sent to the island. He was Hui, from the clan of Busti the Cruel, the same youngster who had been the first to capitulate to the threat of execution. During the march to the sea, Tanus had kept the lad close to him, and had turned all the irresistible force of his personality upon him. By this time, Hui was his willing slave. This special gift of Tanus to win loyalty and devotion from the most unlikely quarters never failed to amaze me. I was sure that Hui, who had buckled so swiftly under the threat of execution, would now willingly lay down his worthless life for Tanus. Under Tanus' spell, Hui poured out every detail that he could remember of the clan to which he had once sworn a blood oath. I listened quietly with my writing brush poised, as Tanus questioned him, and I recorded all he had to tell us. We learned that the stronghold of Busti the Cruel was in the fastness of that awful desert of Jebel Bahari, on the summit of one of the flat-top mountains that was protected by sheer cliffs on every side. Hidden and impregnable, but less than 2 days' march from the east bank of the Nile, and the busy caravan routes that ran along its banks, it was the perfect nest for the raptor. "There is one path to the top, cut like a stairway from the rock. It is wide enough for only one man to climb at a time," Hui told us. "There is no other way to the summit?" Tanus asked, and Hui grinned and laid his finger along his nose in a conspiratory gesture. "There is another route. I have used it often to return to the mountain after I had deserted my post to visit a lady friend. Busti would have killed me if he had known I was missing. It is a dangerous climb, but a dozen good men could make it and hold the top of the cliff, while the main force came up the pathway to them. I will lead you up it, Akhoros." It was the first time that I had heard the name. Akhoros, the brother of the great god Horus. It was a good name for Tanus. Naturally, Hui and our other captives could not know Tanus' real identity. They knew only in their simple way that Tanus must be some kind of god. He looked like a god, and he fought like a god, and he invoked the name of Horus in the midst of battle. So, they had reasoned, he must be the brother of Horus. Akhoros. It was a name that all Egypt would come to know well in the months ahead. It would be shouted from hilltop to hilltop. It would be carried along the caravan routes. It would travel the length of the river on the lips of the boatmen from city to city and from kingdom to kingdom. The legend would grow up around the name as the accounts of his deeds were repeated and exaggerated at each telling. Akhoros was the mighty warrior who appeared from nowhere, sent by his brother Horus to continue the eternal struggle against evil, against Akseth, the lord of the shrikes. Akhoros. Each time the people of Egypt repeated the name, it would fill their hearts with fresh hope. All that was in the future, as we sat in the garden of Tiamat the merchant. Only I knew how hot Tanus was for Busti, and how eager to lead his men into the Jebel Bahari to hunt him down. It was not only that Busty was the most rapacious and pitiless of all the barons. There was much more to it than that. Tunnus had a very personal score to settle with that bandit. From me, Tunnus had learned that Busty had been the particular instrument that Ak Seth had used to destroy the fortune of Pyanki, Lord Harab, Tunnus' father. "I can lead you up the cliffs of Jebel Bahari," Huey promised. "I can deliver Busty into your hands." Tunnus was silent a while in the darkness as he savoured that promise. We sat and listened to the nightingale singing at the bottom of Tiamat's garden. It was a sound totally alien from the evil and desperate affairs that we were discussing. After a while, Tunnus sighed and dismissed Hui. "You have done well, lad," he told him. "Fulfill your promise, and you will find me grateful." Hui prostrated himself as though before a god, and Tunnus nudged him irritably with his foot. "Enough of that nonsense. Away with you now." This recent unlooked-for elevation to the godhead embarrassed Tunnus. No one could ever accuse him of being either modest or humble, but he was at least a pragmatist, with no false illusions of his own station. He never aspired to become either a pharaoh or a divine, and he was always short with any civility or obsequious behaviour from those around him. As soon as the lad was gone, Tunnus turned back to me. "So often I lie awake in the night and consider all that you have told me about my father. I ache in every fibre of my body and soul for revenge against the one who drove him into penury and disgrace and hounded him to his death. I can barely restrain myself. I am filled by the desire to abandon this devious way that you have devised of trapping Ak Seth. Instead, I long to seek him out directly and tear out his foul heart with my bare hands." "If you do that, you will lose everything," I said. "You know that well. Do it my way, and you will restore not only your own reputation, but that of your noble father into the bargain. My way, you will retrieve the estate and the fortune that was stolen from you. My way will not only give you your full measure of revenge, but will also lead you back to Lostris and the fulfilment of the vision that I divined for the pair of you in the mazes of Amon-Ra. Trust me, Tunnus. For your sake and the sake of my mistress, trust me." "If I don't trust you, then who can I trust?" he asked, and touched my arm. "I know you are right, but I have always lacked patience. For me, the swift and direct road has always been easiest." "For the time being, put Ak Seth out of your mind. Think only of the next step along the devious way that we must travel together. Think of Busty the Cruel. It was Busty who destroyed your father's trade caravans as they returned from the east. For 5 seasons, not one of the caravans of Lord Harab ever returned to Karnak. They were all attacked and looted along the road. It was Busty who destroyed your father's copper mines at Sestra and murdered the engineers and their slave workers. Since then, those rich veins of ore have lain untapped. It was Busty who systematically pillaged your father's estates along the Nile, who slaughtered his slaves in the fields and burned the crops, until, in the end, only weeds grew in Lord Harab's fields, and he was forced to sell them at a fraction of their real worth. All that may be true, but it was Ak Seth who gave Busty his orders, Tunnus said. No one will believe that. Pharaoh will not believe that unless he hears Busty confess it, I told him impatiently. Why are you always so stubborn? We have gone over this 100 times. The barons first, and then at last the head of the snake, Ak Seth. Yours is the voice of wisdom, I know it. But it is hard to bear the waiting. I long for my revenge. I long to cleanse the stain of sedition and treason from my honour. And I long, oh, how I long, for Lostris.